everybody. Welcome to Drive Thru HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day. And our music makes me laugh. I can't help myself, Nisha, every day. It makes me happy. So we definitely want to get to our guest quickly because she has got some really amazing things to talk about. So, first time on the show, Julie Winkle Giuliani. Giuliani. Love the name. Yours and his, both. I like it. Combo works well. So, welcome to Drive Thru HR.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, let's get it kicked off, and if you would introduce yourself, and then we'll kind of roll into what's keeping you up at night, what's top of mind.
Great. So I have a small niche consulting firm called Design Arounds with my partner on the East Coast. I'm based on the West Coast, and we do a lot of instructional design work for corporate clients, and also do an awful lot of commercial product development work for commercial training companies. Last year, I had the pleasure of co-authoring a book with Beverly Kay, Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go, Career Conversations Employees Want. And it's given me the opportunity to kind of expand my reach and meet some wonderful people like you guys. So I'm just delighted to have a chance to talk a little bit about some of the topics that are keeping us up at night.
Well, that's a perfect segue. So in between writing books and living in a place that looks, you know, the pictures look gorgeous, besides all that, what is keeping you up at night currently?
Well, it's so funny you should mention the gorgeous pictures, because I have to tell you, I just have to be honest, I'm calling in to this interview today from Catalina Island, just off the coast of Los Angeles, where our family is spending part of the summer. And so with the ocean lulling me to sleep at night, there's little that's actually keeping me awake. But my daytime hours are consumed with concerns and thoughts. And I think the thing that I'm really noodling on a lot this week is Gallup's recent report, the 2013 State of the American Workplace report. And they shared some scary numbers. Yet again, only 30% of us in the U.S. are engaged, meaning that 70% of us aren't engaged in our work. And I guess the worry that I have is there are huge business implications for that kind of disengagement. But it's more than an HR and a business problem. It's really also a human problem that I think we've got to kind of crack the code on, figure out and do something about sooner rather than later.
So what's, in the Gallup research has definitely been top of conversation a lot lately. So what would be, especially we have a lot of practitioners out there that day by day are doing all that tactical execution and the process flow. So what would you recommend for small team, small HR department, overworked, probably underpaid? Mm-hmm. What's one thing that they could start doing to help change their level of and or drive their engagement?
Well, Brian, I'm not sure that there's one thing that really needs to be done. I think it's probably a combination of things, and the combination will be a little bit different based upon the organization and their audience and the unique needs that they have. Over the years, I've done a lot of field research into what contributes to the disengagement, what causes people to turn off at work. And it seems like it comes down to really five, I refer to them as the five U's, that having unclear expectations, not really knowing what you're responsible for, and how that fits into the big picture, that's a huge trigger for disengagement. A second U would be the unnecessary systems and rules and processes. And don't get me wrong, they're necessary in organizations. But when employees find themselves in a culture where there's more energy put into working around things and making things work, that's another real cue to, you know, step back and protect myself psychically from what's going on and disengage. There's the unproductive use of time. We hear that especially from working moms who are in the workplace, you know, who are trying to fit so much into a day that wasting my time is huge and a trigger to disengage. Unrelenting change, that change for change's sake, and we hear it all the time in organizations when people start saying, well, you know, this too will pass, or it's the flavor of the month sort of thing. It's people's way of distancing themselves from that discomfort. But for me, I think the biggest trigger is really underutilization, not being able to bring one's full talents to bear, not being able to develop in the workplace. So I think for practitioners to be able to step back and look at, maybe diagnose their situations based upon those five factors may be the one big thing, and then there are lots of customized combination of smaller things that are put in place to remediate.
That's really interesting, Julie. Well, there is an ongoing debate going on, says engagement should start from the employees first. So what do you think normally? Who owns the engagement really, employees or the employers?
You know, Misha, that is a really good question. And I think my answer is C, all of the above. I think if we're really going to move the needle on engagement, and we have to, I mean, like the Gallup numbers say that in the U.S. it's costing us $450 to $550 billion a year. So it's really worth everybody taking a look at this and everybody owning the solution. I mean, clearly the organization needs to be looking globally at what's happening and what it can do, what it can put in place that enables the highest level of engagement, that removes the roadblocks. I think managers, supervisors, leaders need to be actively engaged in the equation, really looking at where are those roadblocks and where can they, you know, sort of be the blockers and tacklers, moving things out of the way, allowing their people to bring the best that they can into the workplace. And then clearly employees need to step up. And, you know, part of that is, I think, us helping people understand the value of engagement to them as individuals. Because, you know, we see the business case for engagement all the time. You know, there's that whole breadcrumb trail from engagement drives that discretionary effort, that extra oomph, the energy, the time, the care, the extra that an employee can bring to the work that they do or withhold from it. And then that, of course, that discretionary effort drives all sorts of customer outcomes, you know, innovation, improvements, productivity, whatever it might be that hit the bottom line. So that's been drilled into our head. But what I don't think employees understand is that we're one complete and whole person. You know, we don't take part of ourselves to work and reserve part of ourselves for home. You know, we take the whole person to both. And so as a result, what happens at work affects home. You know, you can't dim your lights and turn off your mind and your energy in the workplace and then expect that at home you're going to flip a switch and suddenly you're going to become bright and engaged. One affects the other. And, you know, I mean, there's lots of research into, you know, to correlate wellness and engagement and whatnot. You know, I think over time it'll be very interesting and probably tragic to see research that looks at what this disengagement is doing to our families, what ultimately a generation down the line it does to our kids. When we trudge through our day, turned off and disengaged, and then come home with that kind of an energy about it. So I think that employees need to own it, and we might need to do a better job of helping employees understand the personal benefits associated with kicking it up a notch and becoming more engaged with the work that they're doing.
Cool, that's interesting. And as you said, I liked your idea of bifurcating that disengagement factors. And I guess that frontline managers or that immediate managers have a great role in terms of creating that engagement level in that basis. So developing managers, leaders within the organization in terms of, you know, having a good relationship with the employees. So for that perspective, training is a major part in this, I guess. Mm-hmm. So what's your take on, or what do you advise for those immediate managers or frontline managers to have an engagement in that base level? And I guess your book is also about a little bit about that, having a career conversation, supporting the team members, and having a mentorship, right?
Yes, yep, definitely. And, you know, obviously that's the horse I'm riding these days with that book out. But I really do fundamentally believe that development, career development, may be the most high payoff activity that a frontline leader or a manager can engage in for a couple of reasons. We know, first of all, from the research that development is one of the key drivers for engagement. In fact, Lee Hecht Harrison's report toward the end of last year indicated that 91% of workers say that development is among their top priorities. So it's a driver. It's not a hard sell because employees want it. And here's the beauty part, is there are direct organizational benefits associated with developing people. The organization benefits from the greater capacity that we enable others to access. So development, I think, is really one of the best ways leaders can spend their time, not just to support organizational outcomes and their employees, but to drive greater engagement as well.
Oh, yeah. I guess some of them might be focusing on the desired outcome instead of stressing on the other factors. So so what's your take on, you know, if you were to measure engagement, or if you were to create a metrics around engagement, what would you look for?
Let's see. Well, I mean, there are all the standard ones around, you know, turnover and absenteeism, and of course, productivity is a huge one. But all of those are, from my perspective, those are lagging indicators that are telling you, you know, kind of looking in the rearview mirror how you've done so far. What I would love to see is us figuring out how to create some leading indicators that are going to be more predictive of the engagement to come. And again, going kind of back to development, I think that could be one of the most powerful leading indicators that we could use as leaders. You know, as you're looking at what kind of engagement are people having with development activities and opportunities, what kinds of and how much kind of conversation is going on around career and development between employee and employer, or employee and manager, how much are people able to explore different roles in the organization, how many folks have active IDPs, and I don't mean those pieces of paper that are stuck in the file until next year this time, but really how frequently are we going back to those individual development plans? How frequently are they being updated? How recently has it been updated? Those sorts of metrics to me would be more meaningful and more of a predictor of the engagement that we can anticipate going forward.
Great. And talking about that conversation, as you said, what do you suggest are some of the conversation that employers or these managers, or let's just say employees, want from their managers?
Well, you know, employees just want the conversation. The bar is fairly low in most organizations because it's just not happening. It was interesting when we did the research for the book. Met this one gentleman who had recently been promoted to supervisor, and we were talking about, you know, development, career development, and how it worked for him. And it was sweet and sad because we asked, you know, what was the last great career conversation you had? And we were used to people kind of laughing and saying, oh, you know, we haven't had one. But this guy really, like, scrunched up his face and had to think, and he said, oh, my gosh, you know, that would be my employment interview, like, a year ago. And he went about describing how his boss was so interested in who he was and what he could do and what he loved and where he wanted to go and how he could contribute. And it was just this wonderful, rich conversation that never happened again once he was employed. And he said, and it was just, it's never left my mind, why can't the interview continue? So it's those kinds of topics that employees really want to talk about. They want to engage in a conversation that helps them get in touch with who they are, what they do, where their contributions lie, what the talents are. And that's important, and that's kind of the foundation for any kind of career development. But they also need, whether they know it or not, they need to engage in conversations with their supervisors that look outward beyond themselves, that look forward into the future, that look at what's going on with the business, what about our industry, what are the trends, what's happening with our clients and customers that's affecting the business, because that kind of foresight becomes the guardrails, if you will, for any kind of meaningful career development. So I can grow and develop and move and morph within the boundaries of what's necessary within the organization, industry, and business in general. And so all of those kinds of conversations can really help drive development and drive the kind of engagement that we've been talking about that could move the needle in a lot of different ways as well.
Interesting. I'm going to do a quick reset, everybody. We are talking to our wonderful guest, Julie Winkle-Julian, and we're talking all about employee engagement and mentoring and creating leaders within the organization. So, Julie, as you said, I totally agree that some of the managers were not able to, you know, connect the dots, you know, where these employees work or their contribution is directly linked to the business or to the industry in general. So that is where it lacks the skills, I think so.
Yeah, I think it's a blind spot, and I don't know if it's a lack of skill or just lack of awareness, but as soon as managers and leaders understand the connection, then they're in a great position to engage employees in understanding it. And, you know, the thing about career development, again, as we were doing the research for the book, what we wanted to get to the bottom of was why isn't it happening as much as we know it should in organization? Because most managers, you know, they feel like they get into leadership because they want to make a difference, and then they get caught up in other stuff. The number one reason we found from our research why career development isn't happening is because of the perception of time and how time, you know, managers just don't have the time to do these kinds of things. So one of the things that's really important for us to help managers see is that career development doesn't have to be a time sink. And then, and so, like, relative to what we were just talking about, this whole looking outward and learning more about the business and connecting the dots, managers don't even have to do all of that for their employees. They can create a framework. They can set up a system where, you know, each month at monthly meetings, an employee takes a turn at having researched and reporting back to the rest of the group on a factor that's impacting the business. Maybe they take turns bringing in, you know, current events. Perhaps it's bringing a customer into a meeting to talk about the pressures that are the reality that that customer lives and what the implications are for them, the business. So there are ways that managers can intelligently make this happen without it being an extra big to-do on their already, you know, excessive list of tasks to get accomplished each day.
So, Julie, just to kind of switch gears a little bit, where does recruiting, let's kind of go before the interview, where does actual recruiting strategy or talent acquisition play into your engagement strategy?
Well, that's huge, Brian. That's a really good point. Because clearly having, you know, we Jim Collins talks about the right people on the bus, but you got to get them even in line before that, don't you? Making sure that there's a real match, an authentic match in terms of, you know, mindset, desire, motivation. And so the whole recruiting piece, making sure that hiring managers have the right pool of compatible individuals right from the get-go becomes key because, you know, not that we'd want to peg people, if you will, but if you've got a round hole that demands a particular skill set, mindset, orientation, it doesn't matter how much work you do to engage a square peg, it's still not going to be a good fit, and it'll be tremendous energy expended with very little payback on the part of both the employee and the manager.
So where do you, I mean, that's, you know, because once you get, that's great when you're starting a company, and it's nice when you can start, you know, blue ocean. So, but if you're a company of, let's just say, a few hundred people, which isn't huge, but it's definitely big enough to keep some people up at night, how do you redefine your strategy to actually align better with where you want to take engagement as far as recruiting?
Well, if the strategy, if you're going to redefine it, isn't separate from, but needs to be married to engagement. And engagement becomes a central component of the strategy. And so, for instance, if you're an organization, you know, of 100, maybe it's a professional services organization with practitioners working across the United States, then you have to look at the business strategy is not a different animal from the engagement strategy. So how we go to market, who we go to market after, what kinds of products and services we work around, the philosophy and standard operating procedures that drive us all need to be supportive of engagement. They all need to be looked at through the eye of, from an employee standpoint, what's the impact of this on me? And how can we get the employees, rather than working to get them on board afterward, how can we get them on board right within the fabric of that strategy so that it's a much more holistic way of operating rather than having these compartments or drawers where we put the different parts of the business? I think that's been the challenge that we've had in the past is we've treated engagement as a separate activity, and it can't be. It's all mushed together in everything that we do every day. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's more, I think organizations struggle in one, being able to look in the mirror and be truly honest about what they, who they really are, first of all. I think that's a huge challenge, cutting through kind of where authenticity really starts and ends and what it really is. But two, is actually aligning to and combining kind of the KPIs that are needed, you know, to actually run the business with exactly what the people are that need to get those things done at the end of the day. I think that's a huge issue because I don't think people hire as much for culture as they probably should. They hire for really poorly written job descriptions.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
So, you know, retooling that, I think that's probably the biggest challenge because, again, that's a, that ends up being a strategic, you know, put in the strategic bucket, which everybody doesn't have time for.
Yeah.
So it's that ugly cycle, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you addressed. There's some things you got to make time for. You know, you can't wish away the fact that you don't have good engagement or you don't have good delivery of your service product. You can't wish that away or you can't hire that away. You've actually got to dedicate some time. Call it strategic, call it whatever you want. You got to dedicate time to feeding that thing to make it healthier, or it doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. And you need to take the time to connect the dots between and among those things because rarely is one separate from the others. There's generally some connection between the people engagement, the service delivery, the efficiency, the lack of productivity, the lack of innovation, whatever it might be. They rarely operate in isolation.
Yes. Rarely is probably an understatement.
Yeah, talking about, as you said, you know, the perception of time and that career development doesn't have to be a time-bound thing. But there are some myths going on in the workplace. So, some of them say that development efforts, you know, are better or yield more results when you focus more on the high potential or high performers. So that creates a lot of what would I say, ambiguity, and then it affects the culture of the organization, right?
It does. And that really worries me, because I think in too many organizations, you know, we've got the bell curve and we've got the high potent one end, and a lot of energy is put into developing those folks. And don't get me wrong, you put some good development toward folks who are high performers and high potential, and you're going to see results. So great. Then a tremendous amount of time is spent at the other end of the continuum with a very different kind of conversation with a very different performer, if you know what I mean. And then that 80% in the middle, the big part of the bell, gets ignored. And from my perspective, if leaders spent just a small amount of energy, of time, of attention on that 80%, what we could drive in terms of engagement, increased capacity, and business results would be phenomenal. And it takes, as you said, Misha, rethinking, you know, create a new mindset or a new culture that places equal attention and equal importance on that big part of the bell.
Yeah, I really agree. I totally agree with you. And Julie, I really appreciate your advice. And before we let you go, I want to ask, you know, if there was any final piece of advice that you had for our HR and employees out there.
You know, I think just in terms of wrapping up this discussion of engagement, I think I'd really like to just reiterate that as practitioners, as leaders, as individuals, I think we need to really look at the human impact of disengagement, really start thinking about the cost associated beyond the dollars and cents, but to the human psyche and soul, and find some ways to use that as a new framing for this argument for engagement.
Cool. So where can people connect you? Where can people come and find you? What are your travel plans for this year?
So you can always find me at my website, juliewinklejulioni.com. I do weekly blogs there, as well as there are links to other blog locations where I'm writing on a regular basis. That's probably the best way you can reach me directly through that. If you wanted to talk about any of these issues, or if your organization needs any help in terms of learning to help make some of the changes and move the needle in this direction.
Well, thank you so much, Julie, for joining with us today and sharing your insights.
Oh, thank you both, Misha and Brian. It's been a delight. I really appreciate your time today.
Cool. So there you have it, everybody, and thank you for listening to Drive Through HR, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.